Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Hey, it's Sprague here. Really appreciate you listening. You're about to get some podcast excellence. It's presented by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
You know how fast you were going?
What?
How fast you were going?
65.
63.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
You got to understand that I don't come up with this stuff. I just forward it along. You wouldn't arrest a guy who's just delivering drugs from one guy to another.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
Oh, yeah, you can milk anything with nipples.
I have nipples, Greg. Could you milk me?
The Fan. First things first,
rest in peace. Hey, welcome back in. Second hour, Dirt and Sprague on a Friday. Thanks for being with us. No Sprague's out. 3-day weekend for him. Got a lot to get to in the second hour of the show. Spring and Line, of course, coming up final hour. We'll get to that coming up at 2:30. Get your fake sponsors in 503-250-1080. By the way, would also like to point out, perfectly on the clock, so clearly it is all Brandon Sprague's fault. I'm going to throw him under the bus if you're listening, boss man. Lots going on in the college football world, though, and it centers a lot around the Pac-12 and what's going to happen with this player movement. Or are they going to boycott? Which is, what the hell is going on? Kyle Bonagura, our friend of ESPN, give him a follow on Twitter, at Bonagura, ESPN college football writer for ESPN.com, joining us now. Kyle, thanks for the time, man. We always appreciate talking to you. I'm curious what the latest is. I saw you reporting yesterday that there was going to be some dialogue between the two sides last night, the player movement and Larry Scott. What are we hearing about how that went, and just what's the latest on the Pac-12 and their player unity?
Yeah, so thanks for having me, as always. My understanding of the call last night was it was fairly productive as a first step for these two sides to kind of get on the same page with what they both would like to accomplish. So the call started about 8 p.m. last night. It was, you know, Zoom video conference. There were 12 student athletes representing the Pac-12. My understanding is it was one student from every school. Mm-hmm. They talked about everything that was outlined in the Players Tribune letter that was published Sunday. I'm sure you've talked about that at some point this week. And really kind of went step by step through the list of demands they submitted and kind of expressed kind of where they stood and how important each issue was. And I think the Pac-12's point of view is that a lot of what was raised in both an email to Larry Scott and what was laid out in the Players Tribune article was a lot of things that have already been addressed by the Pac-12. And that's you got to give the Pac-12 credit where it's due. They have been ahead of the curve nationally with a lot of these issues. They've involved the Pac-12 in their governance structure for about 5 years now. They mm-hmm. do have some of the more advanced COVID protocols that have been implemented in college football. So I think the Pac-12 went in, wanted to kind of, make it clear that they agreed with a lot of what the players wanted, and then they were actively pursuing a lot of those things. The real, the point of contention, and it was discussed last night, it was not, my understanding, a very lengthy part of the call, was the economic demands that the players mm-hmm. made. And, I'm sure a lot of your listeners know, they sought 50% of the revenue generated to be distributed, redistributed to athletes of the various sports in the conference. And for the Pac-12, that's just really a non-starter. And they expressed how that would, it goes against the kind of the model of the universities and what their missions are. and they weren't going to. The Pac-12 made it clear that they weren't going to entertain any of those demands that the student athletes included. So what'll be interesting now is to understand, okay, now that the Pac-12 has made its stance clear on those issues, how important are they to the student athletes? And that's where there's going to be. That's where it's we'll kind of have to sit back and wait to see how they respond, because that issue is more important to some student athletes than others. There's a lot of them, in my understanding, is majority of the players in the conference, the other issues that were raised, health and safety, racial equality issues, things of that nature, are really the most important thing that they're going after. You saw the Big Ten follow suit, right, and they didn't even include the economic demands, right? They just centered their focus on those other issues. And it kind of felt like they threw the economic stuff as a kind of an add-on, right? It's hard to organize a group of people, especially on different college campuses, that age group where it's, you know, the rosters are turning over so quickly from year to year. So if there was ever a time to try to go after economic demands, it would, you know, it kind of feels like this might have been it, while you had everyone unified in the direction of a certain cause, right? Mm-hmm. But in talking with a few sources today about how the call went, I don't think that's going to really factor into how this thing plays out moving forward.
Interesting. Yeah, we're talking with Kyle Bonagura of ESPN. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Bonagura ESPN. Yeah, we saw that. I think the initial thought was, how much do they believe this and how much of it is a bargaining chip just to use to get the other things that they want? I saw Dabo Swinney come out, which was kind of weird, because I believe a couple of years ago he said he would quit if they ever paid players. But I think he had a take basically saying that if you do the revenue split, it's fine, but you got to like tie it to college graduation. Was there any demand on, or not demand, but any ask on how they would get that revenue? Like, how would that be distributed to football players, other athletes? Like, did they make any specifics about how that would actually work?
No. So the discussion about the economics didn't get that deep. It was basically the Pac-12 shut it down from the start, and which was the expectation. The players were already aware that there's another student athlete group called SALT, which is the Student Athlete Leadership Team. That was created in 2015. It's part of the Pac-12's governance structure. So, you know, with major decisions that the conference is making, they try to loop in the students who are a part of that group. That group met with Larry Scott on Wednesday, and in that call, Larry made it clear that it was a non-starter and they weren't going to entertain economic demand. So the unity group knew going in yesterday where the Pac-12 stood on that. And I think going in, they made the decision to focus on the other things. And so while it's certainly possible that they could come back next week when the sides are set to continue their discussions, that they maybe have a different approach with the economic stuff, maybe they do, you know, set a firmer foot down and try to get some of that stuff. My expectation is that that's probably not going to happen, but they certainly didn't discuss any mechanisms for the way that would be structured.
You mentioned the health and safety angle of it being the bulk of the call between the players and the conference. And I did notice when Larry Scott sent out his response, he had those bullet points. I think, you know, one of them was like, we want the ability to keep our scholarship if we opt out, which is something that you mentioned the Pac-12 has already granted them even before they asked for it in this movement. But what's the sense you're getting on how wide the gap is on those health and safety protocols, and how far, if you've heard anything on it, the Pac-12 is willing to go their direction in terms of like health benefits after college and at, you know, a third party observer, all that kind of stuff? How wide is that gap right now?
So I don't think the gap is really that wide. I think that the Pac-12 has actually done a pretty good job with a lot of those things, and it really just, my kind of view, and I could be wrong on this, but based on a lot of conversations I've had with people about it, is that like a lot of the players, it was just never communicated very well what the protocols are. And they hear, you know, second and third hand information about what's going on at other schools. And they're, if you read all of these statements, it's like, we're very happy with the protocols in place at our school. However, we're concerned about the other schools. And so I think it's poor communication is a lot of this, right? And I think last night provided a valuable step in explaining the process for settling on what the return to play processes were. And let's be clear, they're not perfect, right? This is clearly, you know, moving forward with the season is clearly about money, right? We saw today that you know, the Big Sky Conference officially announced that it was moving to a spring model. It's the 7th or 8th FCS conference that has done the same. Mm-hmm. If this wasn't about money, if safety was the number one priority, the FBS schools would have already made the same decision. The financial component for the FCS schools is so different that they were able to push things, you know, completely cancel things or push things to the spring because they just don't have as much to lose financially. There's so much that these others, the Power Five schools and the other FBS programs have financially to lose. It's just, it's tougher for them to reach that step. So I think there is a clear disconnect between what the players feel is prioritized and how it's been communicated to them. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, because I'll tell you what, as optimistic as some of the coaches and athletic directors and commissioners and those types have tried to be publicly over the last few weeks, the more and more I talk with people, the more pessimistic I am that, you know, in 2 weeks, we're going to be talking about how the season is canceled.
Yeah, Kyle Bonagura, our guest, ESPN.com, college football writer. Go give him a follow on Twitter, at Bonagura, ESPN. I think it's interesting you mentioned the players all saying that they feel good about the way their health and safety is handled at their school. They're worried about the other players, because I saw the announcement on Sunday, and then immediately like Oregon and Oregon State players were tweeting, no, but we're doing it right at Oregon. And it's just kind of like, okay, it's a little unique.
Exactly.
I'm curious what you've heard just from other schools around the conference. There was originally that UCLA story that they, you know, didn't want to show up without a third party present, but then it felt like that was a little overblown and guys came out and defended Chip Kelly. We had the Arizona player getting kicked off. And I bring this up because we've had two stories recently, the Colorado State one, which is just weird because of the allegations anonymously, and then the players coming out and saying that's not true. But then you had the Virginia Tech player, whose name escapes me, who's a first-round pick, sitting out, and he basically did an interview saying that I showed up to the weight room and there was hundreds of kids in there and there was no mask, no distancing, like they weren't taking it seriously. What are you hearing about outside of Oregon and Oregon State, because it seems like both of them are saying everything's being handled correctly, about how the rest of the Pac-12 schools are taking this health and safety protocols?
Yeah, so it's kind of a mixed bag. I don't know of any specific situations right now in the Pac-12 other than, you know, the UCLA and the Arizona ones that you mentioned. But over the last couple of weeks, there hasn't been anything to indicate that there are blatant problems with the protocol. And, you know, that could be wrong, of course. Like, it's really hard to say without being on those campuses and monitoring closely every day. Mm-hmm. But you haven't seen anyone speak out in a few weeks about anything specifically on a Pac-12 campus. And until someone brings something to light, you'd like to give, you know, the campuses the benefit of the doubt. I mean, I've read all of the protocols that the schools are using. They seem like they're well-reasoned. I've had several discussions with epidemiologists around the country over the past few months about proper return to play protocols. And, you know, I really do believe that the college athletic programs are doing about as well as you can do. You're not going to eliminate risk altogether, of course, but, you know, I think there is a clear effort to do this as well as possible. And then obviously there'll be differing opinions on what is enough and is it worth it and all those things. I don't want to mm-hmm. speculate on that because I'm not a doctor, right? But I do believe that the schools are utilizing the resources as best they can to provide as good an atmosphere as possible.
Are you sure you're not a doctor? I thought we all became one during COVID. That's the sense I get on Twitter. I think we're all epidemiologists now. We got our official degrees. You're hearing from sources on this. They're meeting again, as you mentioned, next week. Just what's your gut tell you? I believe if my numbers and dates are correct, I think like August 17th is somewhere around when some fall camps are supposed to open up for Pac-12 programs, if they're allowed to in their state. So this is, I mean, they got to kind of get going here. What's your read tell you on where they go from here and how this unity movement versus Larry Scott thing plays out in the next 2 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a great feel for it because it's just, I mean, it feels like news changes so quickly in this new COVID world we're all living in. But I think that the Pac-12 will make the necessary concessions or communicate things effectively to a point where I don't think that you're going to see like a full-scale walkout by like hundreds of players. I think you're 100% going to continue to see individual players opt out, and that'll probably happen at every school in the conference and really across the country. We're seeing more and more names pop up mm-hmm. every day. So I think that's probably the most likely way it's going to pop up, unless something really happens to make the discussions between the conference and the student group more combative. I don't think we'll see a point where it's a full-scale lockout, which would be kind of a, you know, the one extreme. You can't completely write that out as a possibility, but I mean, a lot would have to change between where we are today on, you know, August 7th to get to that point.
Yeah, great stuff. Kyle Bonagura, go give him a follow on Twitter, at Bonagura ESPN. He's on top of this back and forth between the conference and the players. Written some great pieces on it here in the last couple of days. Kyle, thanks as always, man. We love chatting with you in Portland, and we'll have to catch up here soon as this thing continues to evolve.
Sure, thanks. Anytime.
There you go, Kyle Bonagura of ESPN. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we talked about this a lot on Monday because the players came out, the Players Tribune piece came out on Sunday, and we were all kind of digesting it and reacting to it, going through the bullet points, and everybody had a different take on it. Some people were pro-player, a lot of people anti-player, asking for too much. But so far, at least through the first call, at least as Kyle told us there, it seems to think that the financial stuff has kind of gone to the back seat for the movement, and that it was predominantly health and safety protocols. Larry Scott has told different groups and sources that is a non-starter. They're not even going to debate it. So I think it's really interesting to watch where this goes next week when the group meets again with the conference and they talk. Does the financial stuff become a bigger sticking point for them, or is it truly something that they just threw in, maybe they use as a bargaining chip, and if they don't get it, they're going to be completely fine as long as the health and safety protocols are taken care of? We got a poll question on this. We'll get to that coming up next. Some other college football notes as well. Tough news for the Big Sky. There's a rivalry being renewed already in college football. So we'll get to some news and notes around the college football landscape coming up next on 1080 The Fan. Hey, we'll get to some golf stuff coming up bottom of the hour. What do we think? TV coverage now live on ESPN?
Yep, I've flipped over. I don't want to jinx the Preds trying to force a game 5. They came back from 2 down on the Yotes.
It's been the comeback bubble for the NHL, has it not? How about that comeback last night for Columbus?
That was insane.
That
yes.
was a great game. Seth Jones, are you kidding me?
Did that. Playing and well. Then
you had Chicago Dubois, the other night.
Yeah, Chicago.
Yeah, Dubois with a hat trick. Walk-off OT
stuff.
Winner. Yeah, it's been awesome, man. PGA Championship coverage now live on ESPN. We'll get to something that I really hope happens this weekend. Really, really hope. No, it's not Tiger winning, although that would be really cool because I did put a bet on Tiger. We got some baseball stuff to get to. We'll wedge that in at some point. It was a rough couple of headlines in the world of Major League Baseball over the last 24 hours. A coach did something, and then a team had to cancel the game tonight. So we'll get to that coming up. Some NFL talk as well. A couple of college football notes, and I mean, this probably pertains more to other folks other than me because I don't follow it that closely, but the Big Sky officially announcing that they're moving the season. There were some rumors started to circulate early yesterday morning. They were, you know, on a call with all the schools, that kind of stuff. So they have officially moved their season to the spring, which seems to make people think that now the FCS championship will get moved to the spring because you have to hit like a 50% threshold.
So 50% of the schools / teams in a given sport have to compete in a regular season in order to have a NCAA championship. And at that, and the NCAA runs, so all the lower levels of football, the NCAA runs those championships. There's brackets and all that sort
right.
of stuff.
Right.
It's only at the FBS level that the NCAA does not run a championship for
right.
that sport.
Right.
So, yes, with the Big Sky then pulling out, there seems to be a lot of concern over. So, and this is where the Division I Council, because the Power Five schools are so heavily weighted in determining the logistics. So if they're putting all of these protocol measures into place that the Power Five schools have the resources and the funding to be able to handle, but at Big Sky schools, you know, the amount and frequency of testing and the cost that it takes mm-hmm. and other protocols. And if you know, how many trained medical professionals do you need to have right. available on site? All of those sorts of things. Where can you put kids that need to quarantine? You know, it becomes an economic issue for some of those schools. And they're like, we can't take this on. And then you take away their ability to get the paychecks from those games against the FBS schools.
Yeah, I think of Portland State, they had an Oregon State game, and I think either Arizona or Arizona State canceled.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So those are, you know, anywhere from $750,000 to $1.25 million per. So now you take $1.5 million, $2 million bucks yeah. out of the coffers that they were expecting to have, and Yeah, you got to, at some point, it just, the math doesn't work.
And that was, your testing note is a good one because it's really expensive for them. And that was a big reason why I've been an advocate now for conference-only scheduling, is because you don't know what kind of protocols are in place for a team that you're bringing in if they're a lower level. Of course, it's great to have an easy win to open up your season. Everybody wants to have that, but you just don't know how they're handling the testing, how often they're tested. Are they quarantining? Are they doing the things that they're supposed to? And when you go conference-only scheduling, you can have a standardized format for your conference that you know every single one of your opponents is following. So it made sense there. I think we'll eventually see that championship moved as those conferences continue to go in that direction. What is it, like the Patriot League, I think, announced it as well. It was something along those lines. There was another league that
was... Yeah, there were some leagues that already decided not to play.
Yeah, I've already moved to the spring, and the Big Sky just became the latest.
So with that number of teams, it puts them over that 50% threshold, and so there's not going to be an FCS championship in the fall.
Yeah, and hopefully there is one in the spring. I'd be all for that, and I'd love to see them get a season in down the road. I think that's the smart thing for them to do.
Boy, that might be... the interesting thing... Look, we're... Everybody's feeling their way through this. Nobody knows. Everybody's making it up as it goes. So however everything turns out in all this weird mishmash of moving schedules and shortening seasons and consolidating playoffs and bubbles and all that, it'll be interesting to see what sticks, like what people find themselves going, man, yeah. I really appreciated that, or that got my attention. I wish it would be like that. And for the FCS and Big Sky, that level of football, they might find themselves getting plenty more eyeballs and attention in the spring. Now, it's not perfect because kids from there that have an opportunity to possibly play in the NFL, it puts them in a bind.
For sure, and it also takes away the paychecks of not being able, as you mentioned, to play those early season non-conference games.
So, but why couldn't they schedule to play spring games against Ohio State or?
That's a good point. Yeah. Instead of a
spring game or a scrimmage, why couldn't you go play Oregon or Oregon State or Washington State for their spring game?
I think a lot more people would follow that probably closely if you're an Oregon fan or an Oregon State fan.
The SEC fills up their stadiums no matter what, but if the Pac-12 wants to put some butts in the stands for spring games, let's go.
Yeah, it's interesting. It will be interesting to see what people do fall in love with and what sticks in terms of the change sports calendar and that kind of stuff, because you have to imagine the added eyeballs that you would get playing a spring championship every year, especially with their playoff format that is a true playoff, which just makes me laugh every time that they can do it, but for some reason it wouldn't work for the Power Five groups. That makes absolutely no sense. But you imagine getting that kind of format and you're kind of following. There's always been that argument that would you want to watch spring football? It's the reason the XFL continues to pop up, AFL, it's all that crap comes up in the spring.
I'd rather watch those college levels than that. We know what FCS college football is. You're not trying to introduce a pro league and there's people's expectations that it's NFL quality. And so people, though, that miss the football, they know what Big Sky football is. You know what your eyeballs expect to see in terms of what the athletes can do and the quality and the skill level out there. But you get rivalries and you have some tradition and those sorts of things. So you feel more comfortable with the product that's on the field, understanding what it already is.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be fascinating, man. I'd be all for it. I hope they can make a way to have a season in the spring. They would desperately need it for those players to get one more year in. You never want to see somebody lose that last year. We talk about that with high school sports all the time, with them moving the season in the spring. So I'm crossing my fingers, but that was a big announcement out of the Big Sky that they're officially moving their year. I think a lot of those conferences and lower level tiers of college football are going to continue to go in that direction. One other college football note to keep an eye on today. They are going to announce the SEC schedule, the added two opponents, if I can talk, to fill out the 10-game conference schedule. Sounds like it's going to come out at 3:00. And I read an article on this morning. It was cracking me up. So there's different like theories and methods being floated on how they're going to choose their additional teams.
I can't wait to hear the conspiracy theories.
Oh, it's going to be crazy. And there is a huge contingent of the crappy SEC teams that are starting to get pissed because they think they are going to do what the SEC always does, and that is make the path easier.
Make them sacrificial lambs.
So if you're Vanderbilt, like, dude, you're going to have to go play upper echelon teams that are going to have a chance at winning a national championship this year.
So they'll have to go play Florida and Georgia and South Carolina and Tennessee.
So they're like, whoa, 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 whoa. Why are we the sacrificial lamb here? Why are we falling on the sword? And that's just a theory. So keep an eye on it. It comes out at 3 o'clock today. I'm sure we'll get into it next week because if you remember, they play 8 conference games. And the way it works is you have, what, six, I believe, in your division that are already scheduled. You have one other division rival that is on your schedule for the most part every year. And then you rotate through the other, what, 13 or 6 schools, however many it is, every year. You rotate through that. So that's why you get, you know, teams that don't play each other for like a decade in the SEC. But there's a theory out there that they're going to make it really easy and to try and balance the schedules as best they can for their better teams, Alabama, LSU, Georgia. So keep an eye on that. The SEC schedule coming out at 3 o'clock today. There was one other note. We'll get to that coming up later on in the show as a rivalry has been renewed in college football. And I thought it was pretty funny, the back and forth that happened. Let's get to some golf stuff, though, as an update on the PGA Championship. Some big groups starting to tee off this afternoon. Are you frustrated by the TV coverage? I got into a back and forth about this on Twitter last night. There is one thing that needs to be pointed out about how awesome it is right now, and then something that could be desperately needed this weekend. We'll talk some PGA Championship coming up next. Had to hit him with a Gloria today.
Although the Blues retired this.
Oh, they're not playing it anymore?
No, they said
it was a one-off thing.
It was just something that came organically, and they won the cup, and it was great. But yes, I believe they are retiring it.
This song is still fantastic. They need to bring it back. They need to get their mojo back. They lost last night.
Yeah, they have not done well in the Edmonton bubble there in their round robin stuff so far.
No.
I think they're 0-2.
I know they, I mean, they gave up like 3 unanswered in the third period. They took a lead 4-3, I think, late in the second or something like that. And then, 3 unanswered in the third. They lost to Vegas. Maybe they got to bring Gloria back. Maybe that's your issue. We are doing a little taste test of some Irish whiskey today. Now, how many do we have? What's the game plan here?
We have 3.
Okay,
we have 3.
You want to do like one per segment? How do we want to space this out?
We'll do it. Well, it's 1:30 now. We'll probably do 1 at 2, and then we'll do the last one for Sprague and the Lion.
Okay, I like that. We
might be Sprague and the Lion by then.
Brought to you by
Budweiser. I'd wait until you got the interviews done.
Yeah, get those out of the way. Now we're all downhill from
here. Guests are like, what's going on in there?
I'm already halfway done with the show, baby. It's downhill.
Well, Richmond just would have been mad he didn't get any.
That's very true. What the hell, man? Why wasn't I in studio today? So we got a J.J. Corey.
So this is J.J. Corey, the Gale Batch number 2.
Okay.
46% alcohol by volume. Its flavor profile, heavy with apricot and lemon zest up front, with a little nutty milk chocolatey sort of thing in the background. So we'll be sipping on this for the next segment.
Okay, well, if you're sitting at home and listening and you're just hanging out on a beautiful Friday, go pour yourself a glass of some Irish whiskey. We'll do that coming up here in the final hour of the show. Let's talk a little golf, though, shall we? Sprague's not here. Hell, we get into the last hour and a half on it if you want. I'd be all for it. Day 2 of the PGA Championship at Harding Park. Tiger getting close to teeing off. Brooks is about to go off. I had a realization last night as well, in part of pinching myself just to enjoy that sports night and how awesome it was. I was just reminded of how great it is to get a major championship on the West Coast. Like, you have television coverage going until 7:30 at night. It's unbelievable. You put that against what you obviously have on the East Coast when you're done at, 3, 4 o'clock, whatever time it is out here on the West. Having primetime golf for the West Coast is just fantastic, and I'm a huge fan of it, and they need more majors out here.
No question. I know that Torrey Pines is going to get one. I think the Olympic Club has one coming back soon somewhere else in San Francisco. And I can't remember if one of the L.A. courses is getting one, but
Chambers wants one again down the road.
Chambers will probably get one at some point. They totally redid the greens. I think the other thing, they need to figure out how to get a little better fan access around the entire course.
That was a huge complaint that I heard from people.
And so, they'd love to do that. I think the event, I wish, if somehow I became a billionaire overnight, I think the place I would put some infrastructure is in Bandon, because the event I would love to see at Bandon is a Ryder Cup.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. Yeah,
that
would be amazing.
An unbelievable venue for a Ryder Cup on the West Coast,
right. It
would be Bandon. I'd even love to see if, now I don't know if it's in the rules that they have to play the same course, but if you go to Bandon, you could have a different course every day for the different events.
You could. The U.S. Amateur is coming up next weekend, and they're playing two different courses, I believe, as a part of the U.S. Amateur.
Yeah, but you have five different deals. So on the days, you'll have four ball and foursomes.
Right.
And then you'll have the singles. You could use every course there for one of the different things. I think it would be magical.
Yeah, you don't quite realize how awesome it is until you get one of these tournaments and it's on late into the evening and you're going to get final groups. I mean, on Saturdays and Sundays, usually major championships, if you're on the East Coast, those groups are going off, what, 10:30, 11 o'clock at the latest usually for us. And now you're talking 12:30, 1 o'clock-ish for final groups going off.
Like,
dude, that's awesome. Gives you time to get some stuff done in the morning. You get home. If you want to play golf in the morning, you can. You get home, you get to watch. Having West Coast major championship golf is amazing. How have you felt about the TV coverage so far? Because they changed it up. It used to be TNT for the PGA Championship. We got ESPN, ESPN Plus with a combo of CBS.
I don't know if this is a one-time thing because TNT had NBA obligations that obviously outweighed. So this might be a one-off. I'm not sure. The other thing, and I don't know if anybody's talked about it or not, considering majors, is because of what happened this year, it forced Fox to give up. Fox got out of their contract with the USGA.
They did. I remember talking about that when it happened. Yeah.
With NBC, thank goodness, so the Golf Channel can do it. I appreciate Fox taking a swing and trying to do something, but it just didn't work.
They advance a lot in technology in terms of shot tracer and stuff that led to other channels upping their game.
They never acquired enough other golf programming around it to get a regular team the way NBC and CBS had it locked up for the most part. So thank you for somebody recognizing, okay, this just isn't working, so let's find a way out.
Yeah, they weren't going to be able to fit all that into their schedule this fall
You gotta start with the morning rounds. And I don't know, I've heard this from so many people. Especially what else is ESPN doing? Get up and Sports Center.
They're trying to build ESPN NFL Plus up. That's what they're doing.
Come on. It's a major. I know. If you want to do that for the Greater Greensboro Open, fine, be my guest, you know, but not for this.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
I don't know if it's the PGA, the PGA Tour, the USGA, or if it's the networks itself trying to force people to go somewhere else to get content and pay for it. But there has to be a meeting of the minds to say, no, these are our biggest showcase events. We need to get the biggest audience possible for the longest period of time.
Yeah.
Jack up your ad rates if you have to.
Sure. Go screen and screen, picture and picture commercial if you need to.
Whatever, but it's got to stop.
Yeah, it's frustrating. There's no doubt. I had a back and forth with Buck last night because I had tweeted about how great it was to have a major on late into the evening.
I love Van Pelt.
And Duvall are a great combo. McDonough's good at golf. I think he does a good job. You got Nance that kind of sprinkles in every now and then because CBS has the weekend coverage. I think in terms of commentators, you can't get any better than that. And I have ESPN Plus. So
Strange gets a little stuffy at times, but
he does. He does.
But I mean, he analyzes the game as well as anybody. I mean, obviously, the guy won back-to-back U.S. Open. So, but sometimes he gets a little high on his horse.
Yeah, as somebody who has ESPN Plus, it doesn't really, it's one of those things I just kind of wake up and it's like, oh, I just turned it on this morning. So it doesn't compute as much for me, but I agree with you completely. Sprague rants on that all the time. I agree. Like, you want to grow the game, get it on TV.
Doesn't make any sense. When you're craving to get into the mainstream and get more, you know, golf has diehards. Those diehards are never leaving. You want to talk about a sport where the diehards are never leaving?
They have the NBC package. They have ESPN Plus. They find a way to watch.
Yeah. So if you're trying to get more of the general mainstream sports fans, especially for big events, which is what's going to draw their attention, where your fields have all the names that they know, you've got to make it more available and more easily found than it is.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. But so far, outside of the not being on TV thing, which you have to deal with every golf tournament for whatever reason, the coverage has been great. The players were great. The scores, a couple of guys, Tommy Fleetwood went way low today. Cameron Champ was 6-under today as well to get to 5-under. He's only 3 off the lead. Haitong Lee, still on your lead. He was 5-under today. So the leaderboard is shaking up really nice. He got some huge names. The one thing at least I will give them credit for, and this is usually the way it works in tournaments, but you got to give each prime longtime group a chance to play in the morning and the afternoon. Yesterday, you didn't get a chance to watch Tiger and Rory and JT, that group. They all played early. Today, they're going to be the afternoon group. So coverage is on ESPN now. You're going to get a chance to watch them. I do want to continue with something on the other side, because there is a thing brewing in the game of golf that I think would be awesome. And when you're talking about growing the game, man, I think this is exactly what golf needs more of. We'll get to that coming up next. Crunch Time on 1080 The Fan.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that, you know, we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's Crunch Time, a look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. The Beaverton Aloha Division locations all back up and running. Go check them out, crunch.com. Stop by one of their three locations. They got great deals going on in the month of August. I was not at the Glorious House of Gaines today.
I ain't having that. You got me? I ain't having that.
Sorry, Mario. It's Major Championship Friday. I was busy this morning. Shout out to Sprague, who I just noticed threw up. Go give 1080 The Fan a follow on Instagram. He is, we got a new directive. It's like, hey, yo, do more on social media. We got one of those emails the other day. So Sprague is trying to up his Instagram game on 1080 The Fan. Go give it a follow.
Is he shirtless?
He is not shirtless, but he did send out a video teasing the upcoming show on a day off. So props to that. And he put a funny filter on his voice, which was just cracking me up during the commercial break because I just saw it now. So go check it out, 1080 The Fan on Instagram. Right. Give us a follow for all that awesome content. Somebody texted in, literally the only old white people give a you-know-what about watching golf. You're half right there, but I'm only 31, so I'm not old. At least I don't think I'm considered old yet. So you're half right, but I'm not old. There's something brewing in the game of golf, though, that I would desperately want to see this weekend, and I think it would be awesome. There, over the years, have been some wonderful golf rivalries that have brewed and drawn attention into the sport. You go all the way back, Jack and Arnie, of course, we know. More recently, probably a Tiger Phil kind of thing for 10, 15 years, and they've really grown into respecting but trash-talking.
Americans did not like Seve Ballesteros.
Seve, right? It's just having those kind of back and forth where you pit one guy against another guy. I think it's awesome for the game, especially when there is a certain aspect behind the scenes where it's a real rivalry to them.
Think about how much you enjoyed Patty Reed and Rory McIlroy at the Ryder Cup.
Exactly. Exactly. Him shushing the crowd, the back. I mean, it's amazing, right? Well, that is going on right now between two guys who one guy that continues to chirp at the other, and that is Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau.
Brooks birdied his first hole, by
the way. Brooksy, I got to bet on him to win. So if you didn't notice, DeChambeau, by the way, this is another side. He broke his driver yesterday. He snapped the shaft.
He gets to if you break it like in the course of play, you don't snap it over your knee or something, you get to replace it, I believe.
You did, and he was allowed to fix it. He talked to a rules official, so he was allowed to fix his driver.
Did it take 45 minutes?
I didn't see exactly how long it took. But everybody, of course, had their jokes yesterday. If you don't know where this all stemmed from, there was an ESPN The Body issue that they do every year, like with the naked athletes and stuff. And I remember it was controversial at the time because Brooks Koepka was in it and he lost a bunch of weight for the photo shoot. And, Chambly and all these other guys criticized him for not taking golf. Why are you losing weight? This is all about vanity, right? It led to a whole side angle. I probably made the same argument as well. But, hey, he's a professional athlete, good looking dude. He was naked in ESPN, The Body issue. And there was something going on like a Twitch stream or something that DeChambeau was on. I don't even know what that means, but he was on a Twitch stream. And somebody had asked him about seeing Brooks Koepka in The Body issue and what he thought about it. And he responded basically saying, I mean, he looks all right, but he doesn't have a six-pack. He made fun of Brooks Koepka for not having a six-pack. Strange flex, but okay.
Bryson's the Pillsbury Doughboy compared to Koepka.
That's like me making fun of Sprague for not being skinny enough. It doesn't make any sense. So that's where this whole thing stemmed from. And Brooks Koepka responded by tweeting out a picture of his four major trophies, saying, I'm two away from a six-pack, Bryson, which was like the ultimate flex.
Dude, he's so good with the comeback.
So smart. And Bryson hasn't said a peep since. Like, you can't come back from that. I got four. You got zero. Like, there's no coming back. But Brooks has not let up. And he has continued over the last, handful of months with little snippets here and there.
Fire ant comment yet?
So he did that last week where Bryson asked for the relief from fire ants. Brooks gets over there. He makes fun of him on the course, which was just awesome. You had, after Brooks won his first tournament this year, he won the Rocket Mortgage. And remember, during that tournament, he bitched about a camera guy following him and showing him in a negative light. Brooks Koepka, after he won, tweeted out a GIF of Kenny Powers and steroid allegations attacking a cameraman, which was great. There was a video done that surfaced yesterday about just asking players what they eat for breakfast, you know, like, hey, what do you eat for breakfast? One of those fun kind of relate to golfer videos. And Brooks' answer, he says, I eat some eggs, I eat some bacon. Oh, and 9 protein shakes, like making fun of his diet. And then it continued yesterday after his round. Brooks, I think, was 4 under yesterday. He just birdied his first hole and he was asked how he played. And he gave an answer about just feeling good. This is what his quote was. Just feeling good and playing good. No reason to be scientific with all the numbers and stuff like that on a track, man. I just go out there and play. So he has continued to chirp at Bryson DeChambeau. I thought they missed the mark on not pairing these guys up Thursday and Friday. You know that they do a lot of this for TV viewing. That's why Tiger's playing with Rory and Justin Thomas, because you know that's going to draw eyeballs. Man, if you want to grow the game of golf, I don't know how much this relates to non-golf fan, but I feel like DeChambeau has made some headlines because of his size. Brooks Koepka really was DeChambeau before DeChambeau bulked up. He was the big Hulk Hogan on the golf course. If these guys find a way to pair up on the weekend, I didn't see what DeChambeau's final number was today, but God give me that, because it would be amazing television for the game of golf. They need one of those rivalries again, and I think it would be a huge boom for them.
I don't know if they're both going to play in the Wyndham next week or not, but if you're the Wyndham Championships,
you want to get eyeballs?
I am for sure putting those guys in the same group.
Dude, Thursday, Friday, you get them back-to-back days? Who's not watching that?
And I don't know how much, I don't know if players can, I don't know how much influence they can have to say, I ain't playing with that guy. Like Tiger probably does. Like if Tiger, I mean, as long as you're not doing it every week, but if Tiger went and said, I don't want to play with that guy, they probably would.
Right. He's usually playing with a feature group every week anyways, because they want the eyeballs on him.
But he's usually only playing in the biggest events where they can always find a couple of, you know, they're not. Usually the tournament committees and the pairing guys doing the pairings aren't stupid. Like, you don't want to piss Tiger off so he doesn't come back to your tournament.
Right. He's only playing a select number every single year.
So, yeah. But I don't know, outside of that, like him and Phil, I don't know. And Phil, it seems like a play with anybody.
Yeah, he seems pretty open about it.
As long as he can, you know, fleece you in the practice rounds, taking your money.
You know, mind him wearing his cool dad shades out there.
Exactly.
Yeah, I saw that again yesterday. Like, Brooks continuing to chirp and just be petty because of one comment that was made about not having six packs.
It's awesome.
That guy, we did Sprague asked a question, I think it was earlier this week or last week, about it. As somebody who has flipped totally the opinion that you have on them, he is such a prime example of that.
Because he was quiet and he was introverted, and so you thought he was maybe just conceited or stuck up or whatever.
And he's got that bro kind of vibe. You know, I didn't gel with it early on, but his whole competitive spirit, the way he does his stuff.
He was misunderstood, and, you know, and he shied away from the media early on for whatever reason, wasn't comfortable with it. And a lot of guys are like that, don't know how to handle it. We're clearly seeing that with Bryson now that the spotlight's really on him.
Right, right. It's a whole different world.
But when you're a top five golfer and you want to be the best and you kind of have that gung-ho mentality and you get the interest, then, yeah, there's a camera in your face. Why he hasn't reached out to Phil or Tiger to say, how do you deal? Maybe he has, but it's like, how do you deal with this? It's one thing. Yeah, you're used to the cameras, and if you're in contention, kind of know what to expect. But I got a camera and a giant boom mic following me around. How did you come to grips with this?
Right. And there's not even any galleries right now, too. So you're just dealing with camera crews. You're not dealing with large groups of people following you from hole to hole.
Heckling you if they, whatever.
Because you know he would be getting it out there on the course now. He's a controversial dude.
Talk to Patrick Reed and go
right.
I still
his caddy like punched a guy last year at the Ryder Cup.
But at least Patrick like steered into it. I'll give Patrick credit. He's like, okay, I'll just steered right into the skid.
Yeah.
And Bryson team seems to just be fighting it and fighting it and fighting it. And you're not going to win.
And I'm crossing my fingers that happens this weekend, man. I think it would be awesome. DeChambeau, by the way, was even today, so he's two under. So Brooksy already has a three-shot lead on him. So it'd take a bit to get them paired up on a weekend group because it's all done on scoring. But Brooks Koepka continuing the feud with Bryson DeChambeau.
What do we think of the JJ? What do we think of the JJ Corey there?
I will give my full recap as I finish it here in the commercial break. We'll talk about that.
You will have another one.
Oh, okay. I'm ready. I got nothing to do today, Swigard. I'm going home and watching golf.
Well, I have a grocery store run to make.
That's all you got?
Well, we're doing a little social distancing Mexican feast with a couple of close friends on the weekend.
There you go.
The barbacoa beef takes some time, and since I'm playing golf tomorrow, I think I'm going to cook it tonight.
There you go.
Since it takes a little time.
Got to plan it all out, baby.
So we got to plan it all out, and then we can do the chicken fajitas and the shrimp tacos, when it's go time tomorrow.
So go pour yourself a glass of Irish whiskey. We'll do some tasting coming up in the final hour. That was Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Beaverton Aloha Division, all back up and running. Go check them out, crunch.com. Stop by one of their three locations. They got great deals going on, as always. Awesome people doing a great job. So go check out Crunch Fitness. Coming up in the final hour, what do we got? We got to get to the NFL, their opt-out numbers. That is final. How many guys opted out, and which teams are most affected by that? Couple of notes out of baseball. We unfortunately have to talk about neither of them positive stories, at least today. We will spray the line coming up at 2:30, so get your fake sponsors in, 503-250-1080, and we'll keep you up to date on what's going on in the NBA bubble, as a pretty important game going on between Memphis and Oklahoma City right now, nearing the end of the first half. So a load of final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.